tip today in association with Slattery's of Pecan, your main Peugeot dealer for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie.
Rabina Mahagat Pats, and welcome along to the second hour of Tip Today, 1800 938 007. The text and WhatsApp 083 311 3311. Now, Premier League footballer with Stoke City and Republic of Ireland international James McLean is no stranger to abuse and threats against his life. Both the Derry native has said that it's baffling that such hatred exists against him and that the wave of anti-Irish abuse directed at him is mind-blowing. Now, Claire McNamara of RTE News had this report on last night's 9 o'clock news on RTE One.
James McLean has been the target of abuse for almost a decade. It stems from the decision by the Derry man not to wear a poppy while playing club football in England. In recent days, his wife Erin has spoken about the violent threats the family has received, saying anti-Irish abuse needs to be taken more seriously. This morning, she revealed the latest horrific threat.
Someone messaged James's brother this morning and just said, rather than burning down the family home, they would rather tie James to a chair and set him on fire and tie me and the kids up and make us watch it. So that was just this morning we got that one.
Erin McLean spoke of her worries for the couple's three young children and called on social media companies to introduce more controls.
I would love to see social media platforms bringing in, you know, needing a form of ID, picture ID, you know, whether it be a passport or a driving licence, just to verify your account.
The Stoke City player said a post showing him wearing a balaclava last year was ill-advised, but that it did not justify the relentless abuse.
I would say to those people, say, well, he brings on himself. You put yourself in my shoes, right? You love my life day in, day out. You receive the messages I get day in, day out. At some point, right or wrong, you're going to react.
Taoiseach Micheál Martin today tweeted his support, praising the family for speaking out, saying social media at its best gives a voice to everyone, at its worst it is toxic and cruel. Claire McNamara, RTE News.
Football correspondent with the Irish Times and member of Show Racism, The Red Card in Ireland, Emmett Malone joins me now. Emmett, good morning to you.
Good morning.
And thanks very much indeed for your time this morning. I mean, this is awful stuff anyway, but to imagine that some of it, or most of it in fact, appears to be coming from extremely young people is particularly frightening, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess it reflects the age profile of the people who use social media, and social media is a very central part of young people's lives, and so that's what we're getting. I mean, older people tend not to use Facebook so much, or you know, so yeah, that seems to be the case. James McLean spoke yesterday very kind of very well and very passionately about the fact that how shocked he was that it was virtually a child who sent a message to his brother on, Tuesday night. This message suggesting that rather than burn the whole family home down with the family inside it, it would be preferable to tie him to a chair and make the rest of the family watch as he was burnt alive. It's horrendous stuff. It's absolutely horrendous stuff. And it seems through the last phase of lockdown to have become an almost daily feature in the news. That some player, usually a player of African or West Indian ethnicity in Britain, has been subjected to this abuse. We've had Irish internationals like David McGoldrick, Callum Robinson, Cyrus Christie, all talk about the abuse that they've received on social media. I talked to Cyrus Christie about it only last week, and he was talking about the fact that, you know, once you highlight this, you open yourself to an awful lot more abuse. And that's been a feature of James McLean's life for the last 9 years, that he has sought to tackle this head on. He has sought to address it, to publicise the fact that he and his family are subjected to this on a regular basis. And that in turn just seems to have generated more hatred online to his social media accounts, with people abusing him abusing him on the basis of his religion, on the basis of his nationality, and on the basis of the political stance that he's taken, most obviously in relation to declining to wear a poppy around Remembrance Day in England.
He did add, I mean, not that anything excuses the hatred and the awfulness of what happened to him, but he did add fuel to the fire, I suppose, with that balaclava posting. How important was that in this, do you think?
Oh, I don't think it's terribly important. I think the point that he made yesterday, and it's it's a reasonable one, I think, to make is that he describes the balaclava posting. So, you know, for listeners who might know the story, during lockdown, he posted what he thought was what was intended as a joke, was a picture of himself and his kids and him posing like a teacher, but wearing a balaclava and suggesting that he was teaching his kids Irish history during lockdown, homeschooling. Like, you know, it was a gag. And he took it down pretty quickly. I think that he realised that it was a mistake. But of course, the way social media works, people had screen grabbed it and it was being reposted out there. He accepted that was ill-judged yesterday. He said it was a mistake, as he did at the time. I remember writing about it immediately and speaking to his agent at the time, and already they were sort of in damage within an hour. They were in damage control kind of mode. But the point he made yesterday was that it's now used as an excuse by people who abuse him and a justification for the abuse that he's subjected to. And I think that's a very reasonable point. He did make that mistake. If there was a change, a severe change or in the pattern of abuse that he was subjected to around that, then yeah, absolutely. I think you would have to say that he had brought some of it on himself. But the reality is that he appears to have been the subject or the target of 9 years of fairly relentless abuse. And this was an aspect that I hadn't really realised until the past week, that it's just so relentless. But it seems to be virtually day in, day out, that every time, as Cyrus Christie had said to me last week, every time he posts something on social media, part of the reaction that generates is hateful. It's hate speech, and it's racist or it's sectarian. It takes a particular type of strength to be able to deal with that and carry on with your career.
What does it say about that element of a soccer fan that is looking for anything that they can use to promote hatred and to have a go at people, whether it's skin colour, sexuality, ethnicity, whatever it is? I mean, is that it's been there for a long time, and won't it always be there?
Well, you know what? Yeah, I think there's an element of truth in that. But I think, you know, soccer is the most popular game in the world. It's the most popular game in the vast majority of countries in which it's played. So it's like a giant opinion poll. And so there's nothing unique here. I mean, I think what we're viewing here is a reflection of society as a whole. And there is racism in every country. And what we're seeing is that it's expressed in the context of football. So players find themselves, I mean, particularly black players in England have found themselves the target after mistakes that they've made in games. There was a player from QPR a couple of months back who was vilified on social media in a very racist way because he had missed a penalty in a game. We've had examples of that in Ireland. Yeah. Irish people are certainly not excluded from this. They seem to be racist in the same proportions to people in other countries. Admittedly shaped by the context of your history, and you know the focus of it here tends to be around asylum seekers and direct provision. But you know, in this case, we're talking about footballers, and once the platform is there for them to deliver this in a way that seems to be consequence-free, as it is because of the way the social media companies operate, then people avail of that opportunity. And we've had a case here in the last couple of months where a youth in Kerry abused a former footballer, Ian Wright, a black player, on the most irrational basis. You know, Ian Wright didn't do anything to provoke this whatsoever. The teenager in Kerry, as I understand it, had a kind of avatar of Ian Wright, a kind of totally notional computer-generated figure with the name Ian Wright attached to it in a team on an online game that he was playing. And that figure did not perform well, and so he abused the real Ian Wright, who was blissfully unaware that he had any connection to this guy. He abused him in a foul way online,
Didn't even try to hide.
And that's an interesting case there, because in most of these instances, the people do hide behind anonymity. In that case, he didn't. I mean, it was totally irrational. It was, you know, if you
were you concerned about what the judge said about that, though, Emmett, that he almost sort of dismissed it as being kind of harmless.
Yeah, I was. And I think, you know, as an organisation with my show Race of the Red card hat on, we absolutely condemn any sort of hate speech. We particularly condemn speech where people are made to feel that their lives or their well-being is under threat in any sort of way.
And one of the things we have constantly campaigned about, and it's very much in vogue at the moment, is that social media companies do more to identify these people. So when you have an instance where the person is identifiable, then really, you know, there's not a lot of benefit to that if action isn't taken. And here we had a case where the guards took action, a prosecution was brought. And yes, absolutely. I think the judge was very, very lenient to a fault, and this kind of understanding that it would be a sense of understanding that it would be a terrible thing, like if a young lad like that ended up having a mark against his name because of something he'd done. But that's the reality of this. This is hate. These are hate crimes, and there has to be an element of deterrent in the rare cases.
And
that
speaking
are brought
of to court. Which, the PFA, Emmett, and the FAI, I mean, are they doing enough here?
Well, I think they're in very difficult situations. I mean, the PFA take an awful lot of stick. And like the PFA, say, in the case of Raheem Sterling, over the past few years, have sought to be very publicly very supportive. And I think they were slow off the mark with James McLean. Mm. I think there was definitely a reluctance in Britain to get, you know, take up the cause of James McLean. He'd obviously made a stand over the best part of a decade now to refuse to wear a poppy on Remembrance Day. Mm. He had fought his corner very publicly on social media. He had, you know, taken the kind of war of words to people on occasions, and so he put the PFA in a difficult situation, because I think the reality is that even among people who accept that this is racist abuse, among British people, because of the nature of it, because of his political views, there was some discomfort in coming out and batting for him, and the PFA were slow off the mark there. They changed that attitude about 18 months ago, and they have expressed their support for him on a number of occasions since. I think the English FA have taken action against clubs whose fans have abused them. The FAI have expressed their support for them. It's slightly easier for the FAI being an Irish organisation, obviously. But I think there is a limit to what they can do in these situations, because, you know, ultimately what this comes down to is that if I want to right now, after coming off the phone from talking to you, I could have a social media account up in, you know, in the name of Mickey Mouse 999, and I can abuse some player online. And the reality is that nobody can identify me with enough certainty to pin a criminal charge on me. So the PFA and the FAI and the English FA are in the same situation as the rest of us, reduced to calling on the likes of Facebook and Instagram to bring in far stronger rules, to require photo ID, as Erin McLean said she would like to see there in your piece, and to put people in a situation where at least if they racially abuse somebody online or commit some sort of other hate crime, you know, hate speech, that they will be identifiable, and there is at least the prospect that they will be made to face consequences for that action.
And still within, you know, trying to change the minds of the supporters is one that I couldn't see happening. I'm not much of a soccer fan, to be honest with you, but I supplied entertainment years ago to Celtic in Glasgow. And it was only at that point I realised the hatred with themselves and Rangers. They absolutely, I mean, you could feel it. It was so you know, you're never going to get rid of that. You're never going to, that tribal.
Do you know what? Yeah, absolutely. I largely agree with that. I think for some people, it's almost part of the buzz. It seems to be that they've connected it. And people who can go about their normal lives 9 to 5, can be a perfectly reasonable workmate, a perfectly reasonable father. They get inside a football ground and some sort of light switch goes, and they seem to see that as part of the gig. They pay their money, and what goes on inside the football ground, they become a different person. It's a release of aggression and you know, other factors in their personality, which it's shocking. I mean, I've been to many British grounds, both working in a press capacity. I've been at Old Firm games. I've also attended many Chelsea games. I used to live in London, and I remember on one occasion sitting beside a bunch of season ticket holders. So these would be people who'd be sitting beside each other all the time. They know each other. They've got to know each other because they're sitting together on a regular basis. And there were fathers and sons, combination, 3-4 fathers, maybe 7 or 8 kids. And before the kickoff, it was idyllic. There were these lads, they were arriving, you know, family group by family group, chatting to each other. And it was really lovely. People talking, catching up while their week had gone. And as soon as the whistle went and the game started, the fathers, 3 of the 4, I would say, were coming out with the most foul abuse in front of young children, at the referee, at players. I can't remember whether it was racist. It was just horrendous, though. Horrendous. Now, this is going on all the time. Yeah. We see examples of racist abuse. You talk about the Old Firm matches. Mm. There's sectarian abuse there. And the only thing, and it's a kind of maybe it's a perverse way of looking at it, but I do think, going back to my point, that this is a huge sample of society. Huge, you know, we're talking about millions of people in Britain are interested. Tens of millions of people are interested in football. Off the top of my head, what? Perhaps a million or more are regular matchgoers in better times. I think it's interesting that, you know, there's a lot of great work being done here, some by very small charities like our own, going into getting footballers to go into schools, to talk to kids. We run an art competition about integration. So that's, you know, one very small example of the sort of thing that we do. There's a lot of small organisations in this area. I think UEFA and the FA organisations, huge organisations with far bigger resources, have come to this late, but they are coming to it now and spending money on education, trying to change people's views. But I think if there's one kind of possible positive in all of this, is that what we see is a reflection of what's in wider society.
Yeah.
And if there's racist abuse of somebody like James McLean, and he is strong enough and big enough to stand up and publicise that, then it highlights the issue. And if somebody goes into a football ground and shouts racist abuse at a player and they're removed and hopefully charged, then that highlights the issue. But what it is a reminder that in schoolyards up and down this country and Britain, and in dark corners where nobody is paying much attention, people are being racially abused. There is racism in every corner of our society. And the football, you know,
it's just a reflection of that. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Football highlights much that is great in our society, but it also highlights much that is terrible. And as long as it's there, we know we still have work to do.
All right, Emmett, real pleasure. Thank you so much for your time today. Thank you. Good morning to you. Bye-bye now. That's Emmett Malone there of the Irish Times. Joining me now is former Tipperary hurler Timmy Hammersley. Good morning to you, Timmy.
Hiya, friend. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, you're very welcome indeed. As a former county player, and, you know, let's face it, as professional as any other sport, were you subjected to any online abuse, Timmy?
Yeah. Now, I think you'd have to seek it out, probably. You know, it's not probably my experience of it. You'd have to seek it out. You know, people might let you know something was said on a chat platform or whatever. Like, there's probably a number of them associated with kind of GA and wider GA and tip GA. So, like, I can't I can't claim to say it's a regular thing that would have crossed my path, but definitely a few times over time, particularly when you're involved with tip squads, you know, you do see stuff, or people do tell you that they saw stuff on a chat room or something, or someone said something on Twitter that would not be a friendly thing thing to say.
Mm. And you always have the guys at the bar. I know where GAA in particular is concerned. You have the guys sitting at the bar and knowing everything that should happen from the management down to the players like yourself. And then, you know, calling people useless and saying, they couldn't do this and that. That has to be hurtful.
Yeah, it is, I suppose. Yeah, it is. I suppose there's two ways of viewing it, though. Like, I think the first thing that I would have always tried on is remember where it's actually coming from. You know, I think that's an important point as well. I think, look, not to be harsh on people, but I think you probably said it as well, like, most of the people that engage in that stuff are not heavily involved themselves, or they're not contributing a whole pile, really. And generally, I know this is kind of maybe a certain way of viewing it, but generally, it's coming from their own sense of anger or insecurity and all of that as well. And very similar to what the previous speaker had on, like, really, if you are verbally, you know, speaking about people who are doing a lot more than you're doing for your community or your club or whoever, like, you know, it speaks more to you, isn't it, than it does the person who you're actually abusing, really, isn't it? You know what I mean? So that's I think. Yeah, the one about the Premiership is a different, nearly one as well. With GA, people take it very personally. Do you know what I mean? Very, very personally. Like, I think, I'd say the highest or the most person I ever got was, I remember we were defeated for my club in a county final before. And I had a very poor game, but I do, and like that is no excuse at all for people.
So is it more passionate at club level then, to me? Is that what you're saying? Yeah,
it nearly is as much at times. Yeah, as much. Like my experience, the ones that really hurt me the most were probably the ones I received through club. I'd say,
right,
and that's being honest. And look, you have the best people involved in clubs who do everything, but then you have a lot of people that have big opinions as well and don't seem to do a lot either. And then to kind of bring it down slightly as well. That's my experience of it now. It does happen. Like I only gave X amount of years with a county squad, so it's not as if I was there for 10 or 12 years. Mm. So I can't make a huge judgment on it compared to other people. But I'd say both of them can be intense as well, you know.
And would you know of players who were either, you know, psychologically damaged or their game was damaged by that constant worry about critique, I suppose?
Oh, absolutely. 100%.
Would you?
God, Fran, I'd say most players are. Anyone. Now, maybe people will tell you different, but I'd say most fellas that are out in front of you, people, at some stage, you know, would have got worried or concerned or would have heard stuff. I'd say for sure, like, people are only human. Like, they're not, do you know what I mean? And the thing about GA players, you're in the community, like, you're not isolated. Like, really, I know, yes, like, Premiership players get it online, but really, kind of, they are insulated to a degree, you know what I mean? Like, if they turn off their Twitter, like, they don't really interact with as much, you know what I mean? But even if you're an intercounty Gabriel, I'd even say a club player, like, you're interacting with people in the county from the community, like, you're hearing what people are saying, like, it's really hard avoided, I would say, as a GA player. So I would say, nearly as a GA player, particularly intercounty, I would say you do need to be stronger, you know what I mean, to deal, because you've so many other stuff going on. You're trying to hold down a job, you're trying to give to your club, and then you're trying to play high level intercounty stuff. Now, what I kind of say, I'd say a big issue from what I see with people's perception of GA players, it's like they judge, people judge people from what they see on the pitch, like, do you know what I mean? So, like, if someone got sent off or did something wild, or just, like, everyone does something, like, they're playing aggressive, like, GA are aggressive sports, like, people are going to, at times, do stuff maybe that they regret, but it's never, you know, it's never, like, criminal stuff, really.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But people make judgments completely without really knowing.
Well, they're passionate games, I suppose. It's interesting, you allude to something there, which kind of, I was careful about saying, because I didn't want to lessen James McLean's experience, but wouldn't you think that if he's getting that much hatred on social media, that he'd go off social media?
To an extent, but then he shouldn't have to go off the front either. Like, it's not, I'm not saying, that is part of it, maybe. But, like, I mean, it's, I don't think that's too easy. Like, I don't think he should have to.
But just to spare himself and his family, you know, I know that Ryan Tubridy, for example, got so much grief on it that he went off it completely. And now it's just the Late Late Show puts up, like, bits and pieces about what they're doing, but it's not opinionated, if you know what I mean.
Like, that is a good point as well. Now, that's kind of, like, that is an argument. I'm not saying either or. I do think if it is impacting you fully and it is impacting your own family, I do think possibly taking off yourself for a period is no harm either. But then I would have a gripe that, like, trolling and racism and hatred shouldn't drive off people from social media either. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, of course.
That's a road, like, if we go down that, then everyone will have to, like, how many people will have to be off of social? And, like, maybe as you might say, that's not entirely harmful either. But, ultimately, I think a previous speaker is really said the key points. Like, it's not, I mean, people, the organisations that are providing the platform should have a lot more controls over. There is no question about it. Yeah. And McLean, like, I wouldn't be afraid. Like, I'm not, I don't, like, he is getting anti-Irish abuse, and we shouldn't be afraid to call it as it is. If that's it either, do you know what I mean? Like it does seem to be, because he obviously is overtly proud of his culture and all that, and I suppose where he's from. Now, obviously, I heard you saying he did do one or two things that is quite stupid as well.
He did. He wore the balaclava at the kids' party and that. Yeah. The only other thing, and I'll finish up on this, Timmy, the only other thing that really bothers me is that some of the people perpetrating this are extremely young. They wouldn't have a notion about Irish history and the intricacies of the Troubles in Northern Ireland and all of that. So they're getting that from somewhere. That concerns me.
Yeah, no, but Frank, this is another border point. This is the main point that I want to say here as well. Like, with the border, with Brexit, with the protocol, I mean, I don't know if you've seen, but this is more tension is there.
Yeah.
Like, you know what
very
I mean?
Much so in the last couple of weeks.
I don't think we can separate. Like, the threats against James McLean has ramped up the last few weeks. Now, look, it's always been there. But, like, our tarnish there, like, had, I don't know if you saw that sign that was in Belfast a few weeks.
That they'd like, hang him if he went up there, yeah.
Sorry, no, I don't separate McLean, the increase in McLean from that as well. So I think it should be a cause of concern.
Yeah.
And I think those who represent, I'm going to say, extreme unionist, should be having a word on it because, like, it's not the way to solve any
in fairness, the DUP did condemn that particular sign. Just before
they did condemn it, Frank. Sorry, they did, but they are at the same time they're driving anti-protocol stuff as well,
which is
a very dangerous line to cross as well, because you know what I mean.
Very fragile as we know only too well. Did I see online? Are you doing coaching online? Are you?
Well, I'm doing once off anyway today at 12 o'clock, but I got absolutely huge interest in it.
Yeah.
So we're running Zoom links. I'm trying to respond to everyone in the last hour or so, and for the next bit of time to get the Zoom link out to people, because it's not something you only want to send it to people who will be on the call.
Of course.
Yeah. Look, it's like there's a huge like space there, absolutely. And I mean, I think the idea of doing this, Fran. 12 months ago, like, I wouldn't have thought it at all, really.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you just realise the opportunities and the potential that is there. But I do think it's key as well, because I did a similar one with a primary school about 2 weeks ago. And you know what? Like, it's such a small thing. But the enjoyment the kids seem to gain from
course,
it. Like, and
course.
I would work a lot with kids and kind of like I coach underage and all that. I give a handout. But you know what I mean? I enjoyed it just giving a bit of enjoyment to kids. Like, you know what I mean?
Of course.
So, and it's just something that we have to work hard to create in whatever way we can until, like, obviously sporting clubs, organisations can go... I'm not saying we shouldn't have lockdown around that. I know it's a very complicated scenario, but the reality is it's very difficult for kids who are not in
of
organisations, who are not in clubs, and who are not in primary schools as well.
All right, Timmy, I must leave it there. Best of luck to you at 12 o'clock. I'm sure it'll be tremendous anyway. Thank you so much for your time this morning. Thank you. Bye-bye to you now. That's the great Timmy Hammersley there. All right, we'll take a break and we'll be back with the Cathaoirleach of Tipperary County Council.
Tip FM's Tip Today with Fran Curry. In association with Slattery's of Pecan, Tipperary's main Peugeot dealer. Slattery's Garage Pecan, the name you can trust for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie.